Welcome to Reality TV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps of all the shows we love and love to hate. From TLC to MTV, A&E to Bravo and more, no show is off limits to the truth as I see it, all from the couch just like you. I'm Jody, your inner voice and best friend who says all the things you're thinking, but you have the manners to never say aloud. Be sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss a week, and find me everywhere at Reality TV Pod. Support the show and score some amazing perks and merch, as well as some bonus episodes at Patreon.com/RealityTVPod. Now sit back, it's time to get salty. Why, hello there. Welcome to another week of Reality TV, and welcome to summer. This is about the, sixth or seventh time I've started this podcast, because every other time I have kids running in and out of my house. But you know what? I'm here for you. We're all in the same boat. And this week, I got a big show for you. I'm going to be talking about Married at First Sight. It could be a really good season, you guys. So if you're not watching it, jump right back in. It is not too late. I also have Love After Lockup, 90 Day Fiancé Happily Ever After, and 90 Day Fiancé The Other Way. Wow, that is a mouthful. But I'm not yet tired. I'm just warming up. And I need to thank Christina. She is the all-star of the week. She is the one and only newest Patreon subscriber. So thank you, Christina. If you want to be more like Christina, and I would love to have more Christinas, you can sign up at patreon.com/realityvpod. There are quite a few levels there. If you are behind on your podcast, you don't want to listen to any more bonus episodes, trust me, I understand. I am so far behind on all my podcasts that I follow as well. But for $1 a month, that is 25 cents per episode that you're listening to right now, you can support the podcast and also get your episodes earlier in the week, normally Monday, Tuesday, and they will be ad-free. So you don't have to jump through anything, listen to any long ads. So head on over there, patreon.com/realityvpod. And on this week's bonus episode, that is at the $5 or $10 level, my good buddy, my co-host of Moms on the Rocks, Carrie, is going to be on. And I think we're going to be talking about Real Housewives of all the places. There's a lot going on between Beverly Hills, New York, and Potomac. They're all bringing it this season, and they're three of my favorites. What else is coming up? Oh, on Total Request Podcast, Amanda and I are talking about an episode of a documentary series. I was not super familiar with Louis Theroux. He's this British guy. It's pretty freaking amazing. There's this episode from Weird Weekends from the early 2000s, and it is on Thai brides. He goes into these matchmaking services, and it is crazy. There will be a link in the show notes if you want to check out the episode and then listen to Amanda and I break it down and laugh our asses off. Check out that recap at patreon.com/AmandaAndJody. All right, that's enough shop talk. Let's jump into Married at First Sight. I think it's only fair. First things first. It's always the first show that I watch after I release the podcast episode. It's on Wednesday nights. It is on Lifetime. And if you are not watching it, like I said, really is not too late to jump in. And there is one couple, really one woman on the show in particular that drives me up a fucking wall. It's like the John Francetic hate that I had during that season. It's the same kind of thing with this chick. Like, no matter what she does, I can't stand her. She's the bitch eating crackers of the entire season. But more on her in just a bit, because we need to catch up with the two couples that we did not see get married last week. The first of them being Iris and Keith. I love this couple. They're gorgeous. They are physically perfectly matched. I don't know if we've ever had such a beautiful couple before. And I love that Keith went over to Iris's mom before the ceremony and introduced himself. And it wasn't in the kind of typical Married at First Sight groom way, where it's kind of schmoozy, it's a little smarmy, not very genuine. But you could tell the way that Keith did it, he would have done it whether there were cameras there or not. Although, obviously, cameras would not be there if he weren't on the show. You get the idea. Nicely done, Keith, basically. Now, Iris, she's gorgeous. She's glowing. And I think out of any season that I've watched this show, she has just hit bridal perfection, hit the nail on the head, perfect. Now, these two together, I am hopeful. I think that they have similar values, obviously, from their jobs, their careers, kind of in the same field. But I don't know if they have a sexual spark. They're attracted to each other and they are attractive people. I just don't see a heat, if you will. Although I think Iris might have a lot of heat when she's taken a big steamy poop and she has Keith right there. Oh, you heard me correctly. Did you see that? I think they were maybe even feeding each other cake or eating anything, period. And Iris felt like it was the perfect time to talk about how she's so excited that now that they're married, they get to poop and pee in front of one another. So excited, in fact, that she did like a little fist pump yes, just like the fist pump that they do in the Linzess commercial. One of my favorite commercials of all time. Yeah, if you're constipated, you take Linzess and then you walk by the bathroom and you go, yes. You know what? Maybe Iris takes Linzess. She's just got it in her system and she is so excited to poop and pee with Keith. In my opinion, it's weird. Now, if you do this in your relationship, in your home, fine, go for it. Do what you do. I support you doing your do-do. But let me ask you this. Would you have fist pumped a yes when you are asking your partner on a first date? Because essentially that's what this is. This is a first date. Yes, they're married, but it's the first time they're meeting. It's a first date. I thought that was a huge red flag, a huge, oh God, there's going to be a huge learning curve with these two. Now, if that was not awkward enough, we've got to talk about Iris's pure lily white vagine. Anyone ever, you know, run up to your new mother-in-law and tell them that they're a virgin? Tell them your sexual status, the status of your cervix? No, didn't think so. Now, even worse than this conversation, which I don't even think Iris needed to tell her mother-in-law. That's a big thing to tell, but I can understand that there are probably producers pushing her along to do that. What was worse, however, was the mother-in-law, who I was really enjoying up until this point, ran like high knee style. She's about to do a hurdle like FloJo. Did she do hurdles? Whatever. Olympic style, hurdled over the gift table to go and tell her son Keith that Iris was a virgin. It would have been less awkward or less cringy if she would have just come out with it, but she made him keep guessing through a commercial break. She's like, you know what they say about white? White dresses, pure. Oh my God. It was not her place to tell her son that. It was not her place to do it on camera. I have major issues with the mother, and I'm wondering if that's going to come up throughout the season. I have to believe that Iris watching this episode was floored. She probably knew her mother-in-law said something to Keith because, again, there's camera crews, a boom. She just talked to the mother-in-law, and then she sees her talking to her son. So I'm sure she knows it came up. But the way that it came up, I don't know. It was a lot to take in. Oh God. Okay. That was a really poor choice of words. However, let's talk about something else that I had major feelings about, as I do with everything. And that is Iris wearing the garter. Like, that's not a thing, right? She had on her pajamas and she kept the white garter on. I understand not wanting to do the garter toss. I don't think we did. Actually, I know I didn't do a garter toss at my wedding. I didn't even do a bouquet toss. Just not my thing. But she was still wearing the garter. It's not a thing, honey. I don't think it's a thing. That's not a thing, right? You didn't keep that on. Well, at least I didn't. Maybe I'm the idiot. Now let's talk about Elizabeth and Jamie, aka the Seinfeld twins. What's the deal with Elizabeth? That would be my very poor Seinfeld impression, but honest to God, Jamie is a bald Jerry Seinfeld. That would be my kid slamming the door. And Elizabeth is Jamie's fraternal twin. They are identical, and there's nothing you can say that's going to change my mind about it. Now let's get to it about Elizabeth, because I really should like her and I want to like her because she seems like a strong, unapologetic, confident woman, but God damn it, she annoys me. And Jamie with the Sassoon jeans fingers, I don't know what you call that, like the, you know, okay symbol, he did it twice during the ceremony, which I know for a fact is two more times than I have ever done it besides an emoji form because, you know, it's called being a lady. Who does that okay symbol with a little over and over again, twice within like 10 minutes? He's that guy in a business meeting who does like a secret handshake with all his man buddies. What the hell am I talking about? Old boys club, you know what I'm talking about. Now, these two seemingly get along at first again because they are fraternal twins separate at birth, but this is absolutely going to crash and burn. And this was my opinion far before I saw the previews, which we're going to get to in a minute. I just think Elizabeth requires a lot of attention on her at all times. And I think Jamie is the kind of guy who's probably used to getting a lot of attention. They brought up his success level and his career more than once. So he probably gets that from colleagues or clients, things like that. I don't even know what he does. It doesn't matter. But what I'm trying to say is that having two alphas with very strong attention-getting personalities is like having two wolves just go at it. It's not going to go well. Now, I was shocked to find out that they are attracted to one another. I don't know if I... Okay, Elizabeth is a pretty woman. She is. She's nice looking. I'm not attracted to her for many reasons, mostly because as soon as she opens her mouth, I just want to stick my fingers in my ears. But clearly they're attracted to one another because they cannot stop kissing the entire night. And Elizabeth's little lip fillers, she either has lip filler or she has some sort of filler in her little marionette lines. And every time she would go to kiss him, it drove me nuts. It was very like a season two Real Housewife where they just start getting some work done. It was just too much. And beyond all of her lip filler and her fake eyelashes, which she was all too proud to tell us about, I was pissed off about the fit of the dress. Would it have been too much to ask the seamstress at that dress shop just to take it in around the boobs a little bit? It fit so terribly around the bust area. And I don't blame Elizabeth for that. That is a seamstress's job to make sure that she is being held in. And I have big boobs and there are ways that you can add boning or some sort of structure because she was falling out of this thing. I mean, when they were dancing, this is when Elizabeth could not shut the fuck up during that first dance. I was cringing because you could almost see her nipple and there was some sort of support garment underneath that was peeking out. It was just a lot. And she does need to slow down, right? I'm saying this as I'm speaking a million miles an hour, and I will absolutely fess up to the fact that I know I have been on dates where I am Elizabeth, where I just keep talking and talking and talking. And it was because I didn't like the guy. When you keep talking, your words become that buffer between you and the other person. It's like putting up a big don't touch me shield. But it's different because Elizabeth thinks that's charming and that is drawing him in and the high-fiving, like, yeah, bro, it's weird. Also, not weird, but annoying, is Elizabeth's insistence to bring back the Jessica Simpson chicken by the sea moment. She's that girl that loves Carrie Bradshaw, but she also likes that, oh, are buffalo wings made of buffalo? That's not cute anymore. When you're 30 years old and your father is standing up at your wedding saying that you don't know how to renew your car tags, that's not adorable. It really isn't. It's exhausting to be around someone like that because you feel like you have to entertain them, not like you are entertaining them, but you have to give in and be like, oh, that's so funny. Yeah. Oh, tell me more about your fake eyelashes. And I'm exhausted. I can't even think of something that I would say in response to her because it's just too much. But Jamie is digging it at least enough to lick her fucking eye. They smushed cake in each other's faces and this fucking creeper came over and licked her eyelid. If there's any doubt in your mind that Jamie is like a down low creeper, there you go. Roll the tape. He licked her freaking eyelid, people. Ever in your life have you had someone that you just met on a first date? Again, forget that this is a wedding and that you're married. It's your first date. If some man or some woman came over and licked your eyelid, I was going to say punch him out, but I probably wouldn't punch him out. I'd probably find some really friendly woman in the bathroom to befriend, as all women do in a women's restroom, and have her help me get the hell out of there. But knowing Elizabeth, she probably liked it. It's probably like her secret fetish that she whispered to him. She's all about Jamie. She is all in. And by the end of that night, when you know they were going to get it on, she was getting quite tipsy, quite a bit messy too. I don't think it was a real good look for her. And based on the previews, she's going to get real messy this season. It's like we're going to have a Molly versus Dr. Jessica head-to-head moment with Dr. whatever the hell her name is, Veronica, Viviana, and her. Oh my God, it's going to get so good. I can't wait. All right, now let's jump to the other couples, but we're jumping kind of halfway into their reception. We pick up where it is photo time, and let's talk about Amber and Matt first. I don't think I've ever liked a girl on this show more than I like Amber. She is so adorable. I was not expecting to like her so much, but I love her. She's sweet. She's smart. She's got like this little spark to her. I like these two together. I think Matt is just a really chill dude. He's pretty bashful. Feelings may change based on the previews, but even the previews aside, the sense that I get from him, yes, he's bashful and he's cute and he has a chill, laid-back personality, kind of type B in regards to social situations. Seems like he's pretty type A in real life, which is why I think he might start to pull back and feel a little claustrophobic with how Amber is all about him. It's very flattering at first, especially when you have the lights and the camera and the family and the romance of a wedding. But when Amber started dancing with Matt and he was holding her, or she was actually holding him, like a toddler dancing with their dad, it was a very weird vibe. I have to talk about the sweetness that was Amber's mom coming to dance with Matt, but I'm not going to talk about it too much because I think that was totally put on, as I'm sure you guys do too. That's just an asshole producer move. They knew his mom wasn't there, so you know they went over to the DJ and told them to announce a mother-son dance. It's just mean of them. It was purely for the cameras. I felt bad for Matt, and I would have hoped that any mom there, whether it was Amber's mom or a grandma or an aunt or someone, would have gone over there and danced with them. So yes, it was very sweet, but producers, you're pretty freaking mean. Also mean was to give us those previews insinuating that Matt cheats on Amber. If he does, we are going to make a human ladder and whoever's on top is just going to smack the shit out of him. Now let's talk about Deanna and Greg. Oh, I have a feeling about this couple. I'll fill you in just a second after we talk about their wedding reception. We are reminded by, God, I'm going to get her name, whatever, the new Dr. Jessica, about how the couples just met, but they need to get to know each other on a physical level now. Okay, great. No pressure on anyone, especially the women in all of these weddings, to push that on people. It's just so much to be having people's sisters and friends ask the men, oh, do you think that you're going to sleep together tonight? It's borderline, or maybe it is just misogynistic. Is that the right word? I don't like it. It seems like it just puts it on the guys to give their approval, like, oh yeah, she's pretty enough that I want to sleep with her tonight, or no, I'm going to be the good guy and hold off. I just don't like it. I also don't like this whole clinking the glass thing at receptions. I am absolutely with Deanna. She's sitting there with Greg at the table and everyone starts clinking and clinking and clinking, and they're just sitting there eating their food. And just like Deanna said, it's silly. I hate the glass clinking thing. You know, just let me eat my salad here and I will kiss my husband when I don't have arugula and French dressing in my mouth. Okay, just ease off with the clinking. It's just cheesy. I don't like it either. Thank you for understanding and agreeing with me. So predictions for this season of couples. Deanna and Greg, I think they may start out as friends and never really get to that physical level. I just don't see them affectionate ever. So it'll surprise me if they ever even consummate the marriage, I suppose you would say. So Deanna and Greg, I'm predicting a breakup. Amber and Matt, I would have predicted that these two stay together had I not seen the previews. Seeing the previews now, I think they're going to break up because I think Amber is a very all or nothing person. Either she's all in or all out. So I guess my prediction is that they break up, but I really want them to stay together. Jamie and Elizabeth, I said from the get-go, this is going to just crash and burn. Yes, that seems to be the consensus based on the previews, but even if that's just a tease, I still say long-term they don't make it. And our other couple, Iris and Keith, I don't think they make it either. Let me know what you guys think. I will put it in our Facebook group. I'll put a poll or a post in our Facebook group. That's Reality TV Orchard of Snark if you are not in there. And I'll put one out on Twitter as well. So let me know what you guys think, if any of these have what it takes to stay together. All right, after a very quick break, I will be back with Love After Lockup. I have been all about trying new things for my body and my skin lately, especially CBD. So many of you in the Facebook group gave me great brands to try out, and now I have one for you. Last week, I tried Kino Skincare. Don't you wish you could be in Hawaii right now? Well, you can get pretty darn close. Kino means body in the Hawaiian language, and culturally, the people of Hawaii respect the reciprocal relationship between the earth and people, and this is the whole idea behind Kino Skincare. Combine scientifically proven high-quality ingredients to provide your body with everything it needs. CBD is actually rich in vitamins A, D, and E. It increases blood flow, reduces inflammation, and this in turn aids in anti-aging, which we are all looking for. Now, if you're like me and have combination skin, you need the anti-aging plus a little help with acne. And CBD actually helps stabilize oil production, which is what clogs your pores. Kino is different than most brands, though. Their products contain 500 milligrams of CBD. It's non-toxic, cruelty-free, paraben-free, gluten-free, and vegan. Kino skincare experts formulated their products with specific needs in mind, not just a general one-fits-most concept. They use ingredients like coffee seed oil, almond oil, kukui seed oil, and aloe. Every ingredient that can be organically sourced is, and if I may be so bold, the kukui nut body lotion may just be the best lotion I've ever tried. Think white gardenia, but fresh, not too florally. You smell like you just walked out of a spa, and you feel like it too. Plus, you can feel even better because $1 from every order is donated to Sustainable Coastlines Hawaii. It's Kino's way of giving back to the land that they source their products from. Right now, Kino Skincare is offering listeners of Reality TV Podcast 20% off your order. Just go to shopkino.com and use promo code REALITV at checkout. That's shopkino, spelled KINO.com, and use promo code REALITV, REALITV at checkout. That's shopkino.com. Use promo code REALITV to save 20% off your order. Love After Lockup is back. What better way to start the weekend than with a Friday night episode of Clint and Tracy? Because really, at this point, it's the Clint and Tracy show. I am far more interested in seeing what's going on with them than probably any of our other couples. Oh, besides Andrea and Lamar, but that's kind of a hate watch for me. Now, last week when I talked about Love After Lockup with Amanda on my Patreon episode, I asked her a question, and I love her, but I don't think she was able to answer my question. And this is an honest-to-God, sincere question. I'm not trying to be snarky. I just don't understand, or tell me why Tracy is so desperate to have this relationship with Clint's mom, Alice. For some reason, Tracy desperately wants to have a mother-in-law. I've never, ever in my life met someone who wants to have a mother-in-law relationship. Is it that Tracy is so delusional that she thinks that she could dazzle Alice into this friendship where maybe she gets money just like Clint does? I don't get it. I don't think that she has a genuine enough personality that she would just want to be a nice daughter-in-law. Call me a cynic. I don't think Tracy actually thinks that she and Clint are going to be together for the rest of their lives. She's not looking long-term with him. I can't be the only one thinking that, right? There's no doubt in my mind that Tracy knows that this is just a temporary marriage. She's not staying with him the whole time. So why does she want to build this relationship with Alice? Tell me what you think. I guess that's maybe another question. Number one, why is Tracy so insistent that she have a relationship with Alice? And number two, do you think Tracy thinks that they're going to be together forever? All right, well, let's talk a little bit about Alice because she deserves a gold star for this episode. She really stuck to her likely conceal and carry guns, and thank God for that. I'm not dissing her. I think she and Clint's dad, the Kendall's kitchen king, are looking at Tracy and they're doing what they should have done with Clint. They're now taking all the knowledge that they've gotten from counselors and books that they've read, and they are just saying no. They are not going to change their mind. They're going to follow through this time. They're going to do what they said they're going to do, and they are going to make boundaries because they never did with Clint. It's like a do-over. Tracy is the do-over Clint, and they probably know that if they don't do that, they're probably going to end up with a Clint Jr. or a Clint the Third. I think I did read that he has a son from a previous relationship, but a kid with Tracy? Can you imagine how that little nugget would look? Wow. Okay, well, let's talk about Megan, Michael, and Sarah. I'm going to make a bold statement here, and I'm going to make a pretty strong hypothesis that you're all with me. We're over this. We are past the point of this back and forth, whose side are you on, tug of war. Are you on Megan's side or are you on Sarah's side? I'm done. I don't want to play tug of war. I'm going to sit out on the side with my arms crossed. I can't do it. It's stupid because, all right, let's just break it down. Sarah sucks because she's stupid and she still wants to be with Michael. And Megan sucks because she's stupid and she still wants to be with Michael. Last season, I used to like Megan, but she has fallen about, 90 points out of 100 for me because she has no excuse now. Last year, she could claim ignorance and say she didn't know Michael was married. But listen, now you know he's married. Now you know that he has two kids. So it's time to move along. I don't feel badly for you, Megan, when you're choosing to stay in this love triangle with a married couple when there are kids involved. Get off Twitter. You don't need to be arguing with his family anymore. Just do everyone a favor and find someone else other than Michael. You are a cute girl. You are a smart girl. You can do better. Go talk to anyone's grandma, and they're going to have great advice for you. Probably going to be along the lines of, there are plenty of fish in the sea. But let's talk about this episode, because we have to. Michael's mom confronts Megan about how she's always coming around and keeping the drama going. And although I've had some choice words about Michael's mom, she's absolutely right. Megan needs to step back. She is stepping into a family here. Doesn't matter if she didn't know the family existed to begin with. And it doesn't matter if Michael is telling her, I want you to be here. I want you. Just go away. I mean, after you see Michael and his daughter and everything that went down last season, how can you still pursue the guy? You are doing this to yourself. You're doing it to everyone, especially after the fact that when Michael comes out, or I guess we're calling him Mike now, he's mumbling something to Megan about how many girls he may or may not have been talking to. And we leave off where Megan says that she has this secret to tell Michael. Well, if you were so close with Michael that it didn't matter if he was married or he had kids and you were going to keep this thing going, knowing that there's all this drama going on within his family, but you couldn't tell him a secret, you're not that close to begin with. But of course, now we have to talk about this secret because that's what this whole season is probably hinging upon. What are your predictions for Megan's secret? I think it's either going to be that she wasn't a virgin like she led everyone to believe, or she's been seeing someone else. Or I'm going to throw a curveball in here. She's into girls too. If it's that she's pregnant, like a lot of people are predicting, first of all, I don't believe that she is. But if she is, I will quit watching this show. Actually, no, I won't. You know I won't. I can't even joke about that. But I will wish a very colicky baby on her because she deserves it. Now, you know what we deserve? Some Scott and Lizzie. I mean, after some of these boring ass couples that are just putting it on for the show, we need some genuine idiots. And yes, I know that both these dates were complete bullshit. It was all set up for the show, but I really enjoyed it. There were some great laughs in it. I mean, let's talk about Lizzie getting ready for date night with Jasmine on FaceTime. She's showing all these different outfits. I love that she held up a skirt in front of her and she goes, and this will go right here like this. Like, oh, really, Lizzie? That's where a skirt goes? A skirt goes, oh, on your waist? I thought you were going to pull it up above your boobs. Oh, well, actually, that's probably something Lizzie would do. But I related to her getting ready with Jasmine's eyes on her at a level that only a mother or a father or a pet owner would know. You see, every time you go into your room to change, it's as if a signal is sent out to the entire household where everyone comes running and they want to weigh in on everything from your underwear to your clothes to your life choices. I like to say that my bra clasp sends out a secret bat signal that only I cannot hear. I mean, from what people need for school the next day to their opinions on what I'm wearing, much like Jasmine and Lizzie, the opinions just come out when my clothes come off. I know it's not just me. And for the record, I'm going to disagree with Jasmine. I did not like that skirt and the short shirt combo. Bad choice. It was like two different color grays. I would have went with the longer dress that she was actually wearing to begin with. Now, as for Scott's date, oh my God, he was such a mess. It really did remind me of that show Blind Date with Roger Lodge. This woman had no idea what she was getting into. She was lovely. She shows up, but Scott is like dropping silverware. He forgets to give her the flowers. Scott's got zero game. And he should know at the very least, you don't lead with the line, "My ex was a prisoner and a heroin addict." His date deserved better than that, even if it was a setup. Now, Lizzie's date was just as awkward, but kind of for different reasons. I broke it down here. First of all, Lizzie is a monster for spraying some nasty Vanilla Fields body spray. Yeah, do you feel those shivers up the spine? She takes it out and sprays it all over her body right in the middle of the restaurant. That is disgusting. Second of all, the guy that shows up looks like he's 14, but he's got like a weird hormonal disorder where he looks older than what he really is. And thirdly, he wasn't even straight. There, I said it. Someone show me proof that that guy is straight as an arrow and I'll pay the full bar tab. I mean, I don't blame the guy for going halfsies because, listen, he was probably going to have to pay full price for those cocktails even though Lizzie was drinking a mocktail. And probably production gave him the difference of whatever he was able to save. So there you go. There is Lizzie and Scott's awful, awful blind dates. Want a little fun fact about blind dates? I've only been on one of them and I ended up marrying the guy. Oh, cute story. Not cute, Andrea. How is it that Andrea manages to offend everyone? Way to show America your appropriation of hood grocery stores with its meat and liquor sales. What the hell? I mean, Andrea certainly offended me when she tossed her nasty, grimy, cracked, peeling iPhone into the limes. As someone who is still recovering from the devastation of Taco Bell not carrying and not including green onions in their Nacho Supreme Nacho Bel Grande, I'm pretty pissed about this. You know that is why there are always cases of E. coli and Listeria and whatever the hell else is in our lettuce and fruit. It's Andrea's fault. Here we are thinking it's people shitting in the fields or not washing their hands when they're handling produce. No, it's Andrea. She's spreading germs that are being multiplied within the nooks and crannies of that shattered phone screen when she's using produce, perfectly innocent produce, as a docking station. She is a grade A asshole. And she was wondering why Nyla is sad. She's sad about, what's his name, Lamar. No, she's sad because you, Andrea, her mother, turned her life upside down by moving her to downtown Los Angeles with no warning, no plan, no stability, and now no reliable source of untainted fruits and veggies. Remember the good old days when Andrea got married and on her wedding day, she was a complete monster acting like she's Diana Ross or Mariah Carey or some shit? We thought she was bad then. She is 10 times worse now, crying against the dairy case in the middle of a grocery store. Get the fuck out of here. Now jump to Lamar's release day, and these two, you know, these two comedians, such cut-ups, and they need to take this comedy act on the road with Andrea teasing him, a.k.a. lying. Some might say lying comes naturally to her. Hint, hint, wink, wink. Now, there's something about Lamar's car, and I don't really give a shit because all I could think about was that bank of payphones. Let's break this down, you guys. There are actual payphones. Let me say that slower, especially for millennials. Payphones where you have to pay to use it. Whole row of them in front of an LA men's jail. They might just be the last of the Mohicans, like a nearly extinct species of telecommunication. I miss payphones. I do. I think every child needs to experience the panic of not having mommy or daddy waiting to pick you up. You have to have the grit to scramble for 35 cents, beg and plead with people, a nickel, a penny, to even know that pennies exist. Do kids even know that pennies exist? Or better yet, you can't find 35 cents and you have to make something called a collect call. Now, no one with two brain cells to rub together would ever actually accept a collect call. You do the please say your name after the tone and say, it's Jody, come pick me up. And then you hope to God someone comes and picks you up while you wait an eternity, while you're counting minutes on an analog clock, you know, like those circle things with a long pointy and a short fatty arrow. That's an analog clock, not a digital. And where were we? Oh, right. Andrea playing rebel Mormon housewife, and she picks up Lamar, brings him home. The kids are going to love seeing you. And we'll find out more next week when Lamar enters his blessed, holy Mormon slash hood home. Her words, not mine. Now let's talk about Marcelino and Brittany. Much like a lot of our other reality shows where you have people on for a second season and it starts to feel really cooked up, producers are not necessarily scripting it, but they're setting things up. That's how it's feeling for Brittany and Marcelino, because I'm not really sure why they are even on the show. I'm sure producers thought when they're looking at this on paper, this is going to be great storyline. They got married. They're having a baby. Oh, they moved into a new house. He's starting this poker career, sharing custody of Brittany's son. But in reality, it's not that abnormal. Their life is not that different than a lot of people's. I think the only reason Amanda and Sasha came into the picture is because their life is boring and predictable, so they need to throw in the bunkies to make it good TV. But we want great TV, and we are going to be talking about it right after a break. 90 Day Fiancé, Happily Ever After, and 90 Day Fiancé The Other Way coming up right after the break. All right, I have an awesome podcast recommendation for you. It's called Bad Examples with host Tracy DeMarco of Jerseylicious and Jessica Romano of Glam Fairy. They are back with season 2, and they are giving advice about everything under the sun, ranging from sex, friendship, marriage, grief, food, and they're making all the same mistakes as we are, so we can take their word for it and laugh along with them. They have live audience call-ins, guest games. They're absolutely a blast to follow on social media. And, you know, Trey and Jay are here for you. So subscribe to Bad Examples. They have new episodes released every Tuesday. You're going to love it. Again, that's Bad Examples with hosts Tracy DeMarco and Jessica Romano. Check it out. Hey, 90 Day Fiancé producers, where the fuck are Nicole and Azin? This is now the second week I have not seen Nicole and Azin together on screen or separate or May with a backpack or Robba Lee. I'm almost concerned that something might have happened to Robba Lee's grandpa husband, and that's why we're not seeing him. I just think it's pretty shitty. There's no warning. All of a sudden, it's just at the end of the episode. You're thinking, where is that Barney purple hair color? Where is Nicole? And for God's sake, where is May? Are they trying to cover something up? Is this turning into a Dateline episode? Someone get on it. And if you guys are actually seeing Nicole and Azin and it's DirecTV messing with me yet again, yeah, they're still fucking up over a week later. There are going to be some heads rolling over at the DirecTV Now headquarters. Or maybe I should just save that anger for Andre. Yeah, that's probably better. And, you know, I don't want to go to prison and end up on Jailbirds. Let's talk about Russ and Paula. Get the boring, heartwarming story out of the way. Paula has chosen to give birth at home next to her Christmas decorations, which are set to strobe mode. What the hell. And I'm not talking about the home birth. We've gone over that before. Do whatever you want to do. But I question anyone who chooses blue Christmas lights and sets them to the one twinkle speed that triggers seizures. And here I thought, you know, the midwife wearing dirty laundry was going to be our biggest concern. No, no, no. It is bringing a child into the world when anyone in the room at any moment could feel like they're at a rave and pass out, or I don't know, maybe they start twirling glow sticks and pacifiers in their mouth. It was just a very weird surrounding, not at all what I would call a calming entry into the world. Now, long, labor short, Paula gives birth and yada, yada, yada. Russ isn't holding the baby's head right, and they name the baby Axel because it is so unique. Not really. I can name probably at least three or four Axels that I know that are on TV alone, let alone in real life. So yeah, good luck with that super unique name. Let's go on to Elizabeth and Andre, because I feel like I've been holding in this rage all night, just waiting to get it out. Remember when Elizabeth thought Andre was just adorable for protecting her and his big booming voice and his anger issues were just charming? Well, hashtag time's up. And now we have Father Moldova coming for a 2-month-long visit. That's not a visit in my book. That is what I call a spinoff. Perfect Strangers, anyone? Except this time we don't have an innocent man named Balky with a penchant for tapestry vests. We have an innocent older man and a misogynistic monster who has entered our borders. Now, let's talk about this trip before I launch into Andre. It comes at such a weird time to have someone come and stay for 2 months. Neither Elizabeth nor Andre have steady full-time jobs, right? She's pregnant. He's basically at war with her family, and they don't have even 2 nickels to rub together. And now they're going to have a house guest come for 2 months, and you know they're going to be footing the bill for everything he does. And can you imagine, and I'm just thinking of this on a cultural level, clearly we know that Andre's father is very different than Andre, at least from what we've seen, but can you imagine what these two Moldovan men are going to be expecting Elizabeth to do for them? Now let's talk about the flight plan. It sounds like it was a mess to begin with, and I understand that this poor older gentleman has not traveled and his flight is delayed and he's got to wait and all that kind of stuff. I get it, trust me. However, I think he can handle a connection at JFK. It seems a bit much for Andre to spend $600 to help with just a connecting flight. And if it was going to be an issue from the beginning, why didn't they book it from the beginning? And they probably could have saved at least $300 or $400. I mean, if you have the money to do it at the last minute and you're like, hey, we have $600, I'm just going to go and do it, then great. But the thing is, Elizabeth and Andre do not have the money. Andre is just a freaking joke at this point. He can't even keep his story straight. He says when it's family, you help out and you spend whatever you need to spend. But then he waffles on that when it comes to Elizabeth's dad helping them out. It's hypocritical in a weird, twisted way. Now let's talk about when Andre barked for Libby to pack his bag. I say this all the time, like, oh, my blood is boiling, but this one really got me. If anyone, my husband, my kid, one of my parents, anyone were to yell at me, just go pack my bag. Oh, I will pack your bag. I will pack it right up your tight Moldovan asshole, you stupid piece of shit. And even before I closed that bag, I would bring it into the bathroom. I would shit all over everything inside of it. I'd go find the dog shit because I know they have 1 or 2 dogs. I'd throw that in with it too. I would find every disgusting BO stench covered shirt because I know for a fact Andre has BO. I could smell it from his bangs. I would shove that in there too, so everything just fucking stunk. And hopefully he would get pulled off the flight and they'd, well, then I'd feel bad for the people that have to rifle through his bags. But I'm just saying, I would make that Moldovan pay. And what is with packing a bag anyway? If it was 15 hours, and we're going to get to that in a second, why do you really even need a bag? You should be able to do a carry-on, a backpack at that point. Go call May. I'm sure she's got an extra one. And Andre has, I think, maybe 2 tight polo shirts. We always see him in the same shirt. And he's got one pair of shorts. He's even wearing them in the family photo shoot that Libby's been posting. He's got one pair of shorts, two shirts. That doesn't take a whole bag, unless it's filled with my shit. And then, oh yeah, he'd probably need a carry-on. He'd probably be paying for extra luggage because this guy, let's all mail him our shit. Now, does Libby agree with that? Of course not, because she likes it. I don't believe for a fucking second that Libby talks back to Andre when the cameras are not around. She likes being the submissive wife, but she also likes to pretend to be a woman of 2019 when cameras are around or when other people around her family. Honestly, I can kind of see why Andre gets so upset at times because he's getting mixed signals from Libby all the time. She's saying she wants him to get moving and get a job and be productive. That's what she's telling us. But she's also the one who's whining about that 15-hour flight. I don't want you to be gone. I'm not used to you being gone. 15 hours of the 15 hours that he's going to be gone are overnight. Elizabeth, you have a lot of growing up to do if you are going to be pulling that shit and you want him to be providing and working and have a baby. Spoiled frickin' brat. Now let's talk about Father Andre. We need a calming force around us, and this guy is just the cutest man ever. When he was eating his American burger, as Andre would say, with a fork, I wanted to see if there was a possibility of having an adult foster home sort of thing where I take in seniors from Moldova because that was so freaking cute. The man is precious and he's smart because you can tell he knows that Andre is, oh, what's the word I'm looking for? Like reactive. And also, what's the other word I'm looking for? I know, idiot. Because he knows Andre creates conflict. He can read right through it. He may not understand English, but he understands Andre's personality. Should be interesting to see what happens when he meets Elizabeth's family. All right, Colt and Larissa. Let's just cut to the chase. Colt greeting Debbie at the airport with a, hey, you look cute, and opening the door for her. I don't even get that kind of foreplay from my husband. These two are just rubbing it in our faces at this point, and I don't blame Larissa for suffocating herself with Colt's Tempur-Pedic pillow. I do blame her for ripping the screen, however, because even though there's some sort of weird, possibly, allegedly incestuous, even if it's just emotional relationship between Colt and Debbie, that's some bullshit. It's nothing that a run to the hardware store can't fix, but you don't go through someone's drawers. You don't even go in the room. I mean, Colt didn't like it when Larissa went through his digital drawer via his phone to find all his pictures and shit and his porn addiction. So why should it be any different for Debbie's stuff? Colt didn't have that big of a reaction when Debbie was pissed off about it, and she has every right to be pissed. And why was Larissa in there to begin with? Was she looking for something in particular? Was she just wanting to mess it up? That's what I want to know. I want to know what Larissa's motivation was. And why is she cutting the screen? What was the motivation for that? I would hope to God it's not to be like throwing cookie dookie out or some shit. There's just something about that going into the room. I don't know. Was she looking for money? Was she looking for, I don't know. Larissa's going to be on an episode of Snapped, though, because that's a big reaction. Mark my words, it's either going to be for a human homicide or a feline homicide. Larissa has it in her. Now, let's jump ahead to Larissa's actual release from jail, and she's getting ready. She's doing like a YouTube makeup tutorial or something, and Colt comes in, and he's playing like eyebrow marionettes again. I freaking hate those eyebrows. But here's the thing. To me, there is no Team Colt, Team Larissa. They're both idiots. They should not be in relationships with probably anyone. They have a lot of issues they need to figure out on their own before they're with anyone else. And Larissa is a narcissist. She's selfish. She clearly just wants a green card, and she's really not that apologetic about it. She's pretty open about it. But Colt is a control freak, too, and that was pretty, I don't want to use the word cruel, shitty, I guess. It was shitty to cut off her Wi-Fi and her data and take away the only means of communicating with other people away from her. It was stupid. It was immature. In one way, they both deserve each other, but in no way should they ever be together. So thank God we are here present day. We know that they're divorced. Now let's go on to our last couple again, because TLC did not give us Nicole and Azin. Hey, look at that. I was inadvertently speaking like Chantel does. Let's talk about Pedro and Chantel. I want to just point out once again that Chantel is 27. 27. I know I am guilty of completely forgetting this fact. I don't know if I'm just choosing to ignore it, just like I often choose to ignore her TMJ, because then I find myself gritting my teeth just like her. But it is just crazy. She acts like she's 18 and she doesn't know what grown-ups do. She's got to stop that shit. If you don't like Pedro's attitude, because it is shitty, I know I tend to be a Pedro apologist, but listen, if you don't like his attitude and you don't like his family, then leave. Leave the Dominican Republic, divorce Pedro, let him visit his family and stay there, and you go. You staying there is just elevating all the drama that you say that you don't want. That's my issue with Chantel. She's the girl that says, I don't like drama, and she causes it. Now, like I said, I know I always get accused, and maybe I'm guilty of it, of being on Pedro's side, more so Pedro's side than Chantel, and I own that. But that doesn't mean I think Pedro is a great guy and he's totally innocent. He plays both sides and he lets his mom and sister be nasty, but so does Chantel. We have to all admit that to ourselves. They both allow their families to be complete assholes. So maybe Chantel and Pedro deserve each other. I just don't think, in regards to the fight with the IKEA lamp, I don't think Pedro is 100% responsible for the fight, and that's it. All right, now let's talk about Obed. I call big old bullshit. This whole setup scenario that Chantel is talking about and that Obed is talking about, step it back to the beginning. Let's say Pedro's mom did want him to find an American. So she goes out and she just happens to find someone who knows an American girl. She then banks her future and her son's future on this random American girl that is to later become good friends with the friend. And then this American girl, now who happens to be Chantel, Facebook friends Pedro, and then they cross their fingers and hope that Chantel wants to learn Spanish, come down to the Dominican Republic. Oh, wait, hold on a second. She's going to invite several friends of hers and then come down to the Dominican Republic and fall in love with her son, who's got a hair trigger temper and a video game addiction. Sure, Obed. Sure, Jan. And if Mother Pedro really indeed set this whole plan into motion, damn, she's got some good luck. Let's have her go buy some lottery tickets for us, because there's just no way. And if there is, oh man, she will make a killing in the mail order bride industry or some sort of matchmaking industry, because if she can match these two together that happen to have the exact same horrible family members and thirst for fame, well, congratulations. All right, after a very quick break, we're going to wrap up this episode with another amazing night of 90 Day Fiancé The Other Way. All right, rounding out the episode, we're here. We are almost at an hour. Wow. But you know what? It's worth it. Four incredible shows. I will give it everything I got. So let's talk about 90 Day Fiancé The Other Way. I was thrilled to see, or to not see, Paul and Carini. We don't need them anymore. This episode was great without them. TLC, I hope you're listening. Now, we didn't get to see Laura and Aladdin. Let's just call him Aladdin, all right? We didn't get to see them, and that makes me a little scared that that means that there is not much to see of them, that they only got a limited amount of footage, and I hope it doesn't turn into, God, I don't even remember her name. The one chick from last season where her Tunisian dude fell through. She totally got catfished. I hope it's not that way. I think we might have seen some previews of them together. I could be wrong, but anyhow, I want more Laura. I also want more Jenny. We did not get to see much of Jenny and Sameet this week, only when they were shopping. But the little bit that we saw, I'm loving Jenny. She is staying true to herself. She's not caving into whatever Sameet wants her to do. And as a woman who always runs hot myself, I love that she was like, yeah, I'm hot. I'm not wearing this shit. Get me out of here. That a girl. Stay true to yourself. Now let's talk about Tiffany and Ronald and really her son Daniel. They've arrived in the motherland. Makes me so completely jealous because I want to go to South Africa. I just feel like everyone should have the right. Oh God. I clearly have had far too much caffeine this morning. I'm about to go on a political stump speech here. Just like free college, everyone should have the right to travel internationally for free. I know it's a far-fetched idea, but listen, this is the fantasy that I want to create. It's the world I want to live in. Let's just say we all travel internationally for free. South Africa would be in my top five places that I would want to go immediately. Now, my kids couldn't go with me because that is a long flight and they would starve to death before we landed because, God forbid, they eat a different brand of pretzel than they're used to. Jesus fucking Christ. But Daniel, he's not as picky as my little assholes who I adore and love. And I'm saying that jokingly. I love my kids. But Daniel is just, he's a sweet kid. You can tell he's got this old soul just the way that he speaks. And that also speaks to the type of parenting that Tiffany is doing. So kudos, or as Ramona Singer would say, kudos to you, Tiffany. I also love Mama Rhea, not to be confused with diarrhea. This is Ronald's mom, and you could tell she also is very sweet. I liked the way that she interacted with Daniel. She wasn't too much in his face, but she was like the perfect grandma kind of hug, like a little Duggar side hug, but she brought a gift for him. It was very sweet. I am just hoping that Mama Rhea has not had to endure what, let's say, a Mother Matt from Love After Lockup had to deal with. Remember her? She was the one who was scrubbing the stove and doing Caitlin and Matt's laundry. God, Mama Rhea, I hope that you have escaped that misfortune. Now let's talk about this moment when Daniel and Tiffany finally meet with Ronald and they're at his rehab facility. I really did get choked up. I'm a softy inside, I really am, especially when it comes to kids. So I hope that Ronald does not fuck up because Daniel, he's got this huge heart and he just wants it to work. I think Daniel wants it to work almost more than Tiffany does. The kid's head over heels in love with him. He desperately wants Ronald to be his father. Oh my God. So help me God, if Ronald does fuck up and he messes with Daniel's psyche in some way, we're all just going to have to get over to South Africa, take a little side trip, do an incredible safari first, and then we're going to really fuck him up. But let's get down to brass tacks here. Ronald has a lot of work to do before he can even begin to try to be a father to Daniel. He's going to stay on the straight and narrow because he really could relapse. And what we learn from Craig with an H, that was interesting. This is the, I was going to say drug counselor. He's probably a counselor for everything. But the thing is, Ronald could replace this gambling addiction with another addiction. It could be drugs. It could be porn. It could be God only knows what. So, wow, Tiffany really is taking a big risk here. I wish there were not such a rush to get married. I understand they want to be together. But like she said, this could really mess up Daniel. So I hope that he stays on the straight and narrow. And on a very superficial note, I just want to throw this out there. And I'm willing to help. Tiffany needs a South African makeover. Listen, I understand I wear a lot of black too, but it's not working for her in South Africa. She needs like a little, I don't know, like a linen boho chic kind of thing, maybe some maxi dresses. It's just like the heavy primary colors with black are not, it's not even that it's not flattering. It's just not doing her justice. I think if she were to lighten it up, maybe some earth tones. I like the cat eye, but maybe instead of a liquid liner cat eye, she do like a dark brown or taupe shadow cat eye and pair that with a glossy nude lip. Are you seeing it? I think she'd look stunning. Now let's talk about Corey. Man, Corey from Millay, Washington. Have we established that Corey is a mix between Russ of Roos and Powell and Kirby the Elf from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer Claymation, one of my favorite movies of all time? It's like he wants to be a dentist and nothing's going to stop him except the woman in Ecuador who seemingly cannot frickin' stand him. I know this show is being edited and we are only seeing what we are given, but would a little niceness or a nice tone in your voice hurt you, Evelyn? It's like Evelyn from this show and Evelyn of Evelyn Cormier Band, they are not doing Evelyn's Across the World justice. It's like they are on a mission. Every Evelyn we know is on a mission to suck the men who they seemingly hate and have zero in common with into their lairs of hometowns because they are not freaking leaving. Evelyn's not leaving the Fire Festival town of Ecuador, and Evelyn Cormier is not leaving, you're already saying it, Claremont, motherfucking New Hampshire. However, I would bet that Mother Cory would love if Cory were to move to New Hampshire because she is saying goodbye to her son. And so help me, if my baby boy falls in love with an Evelyn from anywhere based on these two, but especially out of the country, I could not take it. As I was watching this, okay, all of you who are not parents are like, okay, shut the fuck up, Jody. But bear with me. If you were to see the child, let's just say in this instance, a son named Cory, who's in his 30s, you've raised this little baby boy into a teen, into a young man, into a full-grown man who's living in your compound. And then all of a sudden, just one day, it's like, oh, he's just up and leaving. It's anticlimactic. It's like you've done all this work and now you're like, all right, bye forever, I guess. It just sucks. I don't know if I could do it. My little baby boy, he needs me. Who else is going to know the brand of pretzels that he likes? God. All right. Now, Mother Cory, she doesn't even know what is in for her son when he lands at the airport and frickin' Fire Festival Evelyn stood him up. That's not even something Azin would do. What was that? That's just mean. I don't think that has anything to do with inconvenience or anything. It's just mean. It's cold-hearted. What if Cory would have done that to her when she would have landed in Mill B, Washington and had to make her way to Mill A, Washington by herself? And the previews with her saying that she doesn't want to get married and that's what she's afraid of. He specifically asked you if that's what you want because that's why he's moving there. I mean, she did give him a vague answer like, oh, if it doesn't work out, then we both move on. But she was also being vague enough to lead him on. I want to be a fan of Evelyn, but I just can't support her anymore. And if it's a thing where she loves him and she's just not very affectionate, that doesn't explain how she talked to him when she stood him up at the airport. It just shows a lot about her character, frickin' Evelyn's. Now let's talk about the couple that we are going to be talking about for the rest of the season. We are finally meeting them, Devin and Jehoon. I think I'm saying that correctly. I got to watch the episode again. Now, Jehoon plays on used phones all day, very aggressively with that finger, lives with his mom and dad, loves his little puppy. So basically, Jehoon is my 9-year-old son. Now, Devin, spelled like heaven, but with an A-N. It's going to be very confusing and very frustrating for me. Way too many vowels. They're not in the right order. But she is 22. She's a single mom, and her daughter's name is Drizella. Drizella. It sounds a lot like Cinderella's bitch of a stepsister. And I don't care if that is a family name. You don't name your daughter after an iconic villain with huge bunions, all right? Now, these two, I don't know if they are just special enough to find each other and it's going to be a good match or what, but Jehoon found her on some weird app that pops up in a movie. Yeah, we're going to need some more details on that. And bada boom, bada bam, Jehoon says he is, quote, fucked, and, maybe this is where Drizella should start singing, so this is love, la 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 la, because it's moving pretty damn fast. Now, love for these two is going to include not only Drizella, who walks on tables, countertops, and throws things, not because she is a, quote, wild child. No, she's doing that because she is allowed to do that. Please give me a moment to rant because I need to get this out. I do not buy for a second this, no, don't do that, Drizella. Get down. Stop. That's not what you say to your child after they chuck a mug at their grandma's head. I don't know what she threw, but she threw something. I don't care if it was a paper plate. You don't go throwing things across the room. And saying that, no, don't do that. Get down. That is far too little, far too late. It's not that she's a wild child. It's that you are not doing enough parenting. I would like to formally extend an invitation to Mama Jody's Boot Camp. I know for a fact she would be one of my first two campers, the first camper number one being Leah from Teen Mom's Daughter, Gracie. So my first two graduates could be Gracie and Drizella. Anyone who happens to know them, free invitation, all right? Maybe I might even pitch in for a Southwest flight. Not from South Korea, however. Maybe we could do some, I don't know, online courses with Drizella. Now, hopefully, I won't need to add a third camper to the list because Devin and Jahoon's baby is due in 2 months. Yes, Devin, who already has a daughter and had to have been, what, only 21 at the time she got pregnant, is now 7 months along. So the plan is to move to South Korea when the baby is 7 weeks old. Thinking about that, actually, a 7 week old and Drizella in South Korea. You know what? They probably have a much stricter toddler boot camp than I would have. So, you know what? Maybe this is all for a reason. Maybe Jihoon came into the picture for a reason. Now, I know this is going to be a very naive viewpoint. I know this, but I'm terrified of South Korea. Like I said, I know it's a naive viewpoint. I am just terrified of anything Korean in general, North or South, because even when I think of South Korea, I think of Laura Ling, who was imprisoned. And I know there's no way I could survive a locked up abroad. I cannot do a broke down palace situation. I barely survived a broke down suburban power outage, okay? And I know for a fact I am not worth an international incident for current lawmakers right now. They're not going to get involved to come save me. So I don't know where I'm going with this, but if I ever get locked up anywhere abroad, just send me vodka and donuts, of course, because duh. Now let's meet Jahoon's parents. I love them, but they are not loving Devin. It was kind of weird because they met her previously, but they didn't really talk to her. So now they're all going to fly to Vegas for a week. And during this week, Devin has got to lock this shit down. Drizella cannot be all bossy. She can't be trying to sing Sweet Nightingale off pitch and shoving her feet into other people's shoes. Devin cannot mess this up. Jahoon has to agree to marry her with his parents' blessing if she's going to move to South Africa or else the move. Oh my God, I said South Africa. That would probably be a better fit for her. If she's going to move to South Korea, she has got to impress the parents, get their blessing, or the whole move is not going to happen. All I'm saying is that I think she better stock up in those fist-sized lollipops to shove in Drizella's mouth because based on the previews, things are not going to go well. Maybe she needs to stock up on some at-home perm solution too because Jahoon's parents are all about the curls. And I'm not dissing them. I mean, a couple who perms together or curls together stays together. Listen, my grandma and great aunt used to set each other's hair every Friday together, and they had weathered some storms and were just the cutest pair next to my mom and her travel buddy, who are not late in life lesbians. They're just best friends. Get over to the Baddest Apples Facebook group if you want to see the cutest seniors together. I don't know what I'm saying, but basically they are dressed up like Scottish women, and my mom is sitting on a plastic sheep. Where am I? I don't know. Oh, I know. I'm at the end of the episode. If you want to check out more bonus episodes, more content, head on over to patreon.com/realityvpod, total request podcast at patreon.com/AmandaAndJody. And as always, check out Moms on the Rocks. We're always having a great time over there. Thank you for supporting the show. Don't forget to leave a 5-star review on iTunes. I really appreciate it. And as always, have a great week and stay salty.